Thanks, Denise.
Thanks, Dave.
With Des Dowling. Des, a comedy legend. And where are we heading, Des?
Well, legend might be a bit strong, Dave. I think journeyman. And like any good journeyman, we've just entered the shire of Camp Paspe on our way to Echuca to do...
Oh, hang on. Sorry, yours wasn't plugged in. Welcome to the debrief of Jesus Christ with Dave O'Neill and Des Dowling. Where are we heading, Des? Comedy legend.
Yeah, thank you. Comedy legend, yeah. More journeyman, Dave, I think, than legend. But thank you for that sobriquet. Is that how you say that word?
I think so. I don't know.
Yeah, we've just entered the Shire of Camp Paspe, for those that are geographically aware. And that's on the road to Echuca Moama.
And what are we doing there?
We're going up to the Rich River Golf Club, where we're going to do a night of comedy japes with the legendary Richard Stubbs.
Yes, now Stubbs was going to be in the car and be correcting me on my driving again, but he's driving himself and you're driving.
I'm driving you, and we've just about run out of petrol. We got down to 15 k's left, and luckily we entered Elmore or somewhere.
It was Elmore, and I had two large dim sims. They were pretty good, actually.
I did cheese and roast beef.
So you're a physically fit comedian. How old are you? Be my age, wouldn't you?
52, Dave.
Yeah, I'm 53. Yeah. I know we don't look it, but you make a very concerted effort with the weight loss.
I know, I'm a bit of a fit. I enjoy my fitness side of it. So I did have a 40, so I got into a bit of...
You were fatter then, weren't you?
I was beefy, I think was the term our babysitter used.
Yeah.
When she first met me, said I was beefier. So I don't think I was ever sort of... obese, but
there was no way you're always skinny, because I'm trying to remember when I first met you, and I reckon I've nailed it, and I do this on this podcast. I first met you at the back of the SP.
I would have had to be at the SP. It's where I met 90% of my ilk.
So you would have been going over 20 years now.
Just on 20. 20, what is it? We've just gone November 2nd. I think I did my first gig early October 1998.
Yeah, because you were a reporter, weren't you? You trained as a reporter.
As a TV... Well, I was a newspaper journo, then a TV journo, and then like a freelance producer. I left all that to be a freelance producer because I had it in my head I wanted to do comedy, but I didn't know, like a lot of people, I didn't know where to start or how to get in. It was that, you know, that standing on the sidelines going, I should be doing that, I've got to try it, but...
Yeah, because you, I think, went to the same teacher's college as me.
I went to Melbourne CAE.
That's where I went.
For a year, Dave.
What year?
I was there 85.
I was there 85.
Where were you? Why didn't you tell me to stay? Because I probably, if I'd have hung around there, I might have got into comedy a lot earlier, but I went...
I always think that I should have gotten into comedy in the 80s, because I remember seeing ads for the... Because people don't know, and most people won't, Melbourne CAE was a teacher's college on the corner of Melbourne Uni. So yes, it was physically part of Melbourne Uni.
And a bit of a poor cousin.
Yes, but separate. Now it's all merged.
Mm.
So if you go to Melbourne Uni and do teaching, you get a degree from Melbourne Uni. But we had Melbourne CAE, or Melbourne State College, I think it was called when I started. And but I remember seeing ads up around for the Uni Review auditions.
Yep.
And I'd seen one or two. I think I saw the one with Mick Molloy in it. And I remember thinking, I reckon I could do that. Because I've been in the gang show, Des. I don't know.
Yeah.
You're cool enough to know what the gang show is, as I say my stand-up. It's a Boy Scout and Girl Guide Theatre Review.
Right.
Which is not...
You weren't in the Kelly gang.
No. The gang show. And which is not unlike a uni review in a way, but G-rated, kind of.
Yeah,
and so I wish I'd auditioned and... Well, who knows? Who knows if we would have got in, though, Des?
Well, but I remember two of my friends, because I went along as a very naive country boy to Melbourne CAE, and did media studies and all these things because I thought I wanted to be a journalist. But most of my friends who I sort of became friends with were doing drama, and they all kept saying, you've got to do drama with us next year, you've got to do drama.
Then
I got offered a cadetship at the end of the year, and I left. And I think it's one of those moments where you don't regret things, but
A sliding door moment, I think we call it.
Sometimes think I wish I'd have been more confident to say no if I hang around here, because I remember two of my friends did a sketch or something at the Last Laugh. They must have done.
Wow, yeah.
To me, it seemed very exotic, but in hindsight, I presume it was an open mic thing or... But they were funny girls, and I'm sure it was very good. But...
Their names were Jane Turner and Gina Riley.
No, they weren't. They're a little bit further on. But no, I do. I think it was great. Melbourne Sally was fun. It was a good
time. Yeah, it was a bit lonely in primary teaching. You did secondary, didn't you? I reckon secondary would have been better. I found primary teaching... The first day, because I came from Mitcham, the guy gets up and we were just in a class, and he goes, to make carpooling easier, we've put you with people from your suburb. So I was with people from Ringwood, Blackburn and Ringwood. Now, I had gone to uni to escape those people.
Yes.
And three out of the seven girls knew each other from a Christian camp.
Oh.
So we're not talking sex, drugs, and rock and roll, Des. We're talking Bible studies, cup of tea. And also there was no, as a man, a young, I was 17, you gravitate to other young men. There was hardly any, men in the course.
No, primary teaching.
Yeah, primary, always,
If you were a raging heterosexual, I imagine it was pretty good odds. But,
anyway, I got no action at all.
None.
Zero, Des. Zero. And I met a couple of secondary people and I got on really well with them. Anyway, and Glenn Robbins went there too.
Mm.
But he was older than us.
It was, obviously, it was, 84 was sort of that real, just the few years before that started, that,
comedy boom.
At the time,
My first day of uni, I went over to Melbourne Uni where a guy from my high school, Robert Popovic, was starting medicine. I was good friends with him. And we sat in the courtyard and Shane Bourne got up and did stand-up in the courtyard, which it was just, I remember thinking, man, this is hard work. And we used to get comics performing at Melbourne CAE in the courtyard at lunchtime.
Yeah,
on the stage,
I can't remember if I ever saw. I remember seeing the Johnnies.
The band, the Johnnies.
They always had really.
Well, I Think You're Cute. Was
they always
single.
Had really quite good bands at.
I remember seeing Bruno Lucia in latest thing from England. They were called. They're like a parody band.
Oh yeah.
And they did the real life Send Me an Angel, Send Me Some Fan Mail. Send Me Some Fan Mail. And Bruno was... I remember Bruno stood out because he was in that band.
Oh, I remember seeing Greg Hamm from Men at Work. Was in his band called Rest in Peace, Greg Hamm. And that, for me, that was a pretty cool thing to see. Although then I wondered, what are you doing playing in a
uni at lunchtime?
Another band at lunchtime when you were part of... not that long ago, you were part of one of the biggest bands in the world.
Actually, well, you know, it's bizarre because we're going to do a gig with Richard Stubbs. At my first activities night I went to, I'm pretty sure it was the Models and Uncanny X-Men... And in between them, Richard Stubbs did stand-up on stage.
And in those days, was probably getting about $8,000 cash to do the...
He was good, too. I remember his routine. He did a routine about going on holidays to Rosebud. And he, you know, because to go on between bands is just horrific.
Yes.
But I remember him handling it very well. Well, we're doing a golf club. What is it?
This guy rang me and wanted to put together a comedy night. I think he's calling it the inaugural comedy feast or something, because I think he wants to do it every year. But
could be the first and last, Des.
Well, it's very good to have you in the car, Dave, because I do a lot of country driving to remote gigs with the constant fear in the back of my head that I'm going to have a heart attack and no one's going to know. So
do I, but I do a lot and... I mean, I got the idea for this podcast because I used to ring you so often because you're always on the road, like I'm always on the road.
Yes, we often have a real debrief.
Yes.
But we probably won't be quite as scathing as we often are about how... No, actually, we're pretty positive, I reckon.
We're not too bad, but I'm also intrigued by this guy. Guys that want to do a gig like this in the country always intrigue me. What motivates them? Often it's a young guy who's just... Or it's a guy in our age group.
Yes.
I don't reckon they're often in between.
It is, being a country boy myself, it's very vexing that sometimes they can be raging successes and then sometimes country people say they want entertainment but then refuse to take part in it.
Yes,
they want you to come round to their house and do it sitting in front of them while they watch Netflix.
Yeah, but as we know, you'll go to a country RSL and the guy will go, we've only got 20 people buying tickets and you look on the floor and your posters are on the floor. What about that? Gavin was meant to put them up, but he didn't. Anyway, well, see, you're still getting paid, so get out there.
What about when the late, great Dave Grant and I drove to Swan Hill for them to tell us, oh, no, it's a free night. We just thought we'd put you on while people are enjoying their counter meals from the Bay Marie.
Oh, and how was that? Horrific.
Wasn't horrific. It was okay only because it could have been so bad. So
I find country people more polite than city people.
I think
just a little bit more, I reckon.
As we learned a long time ago, you've got to try and manipulate the night to suit you. You don't just say, all right. You try and move things around a bit and get one area cordoned off for yourself.
Yes.
So you can do a few tricks and sleights of hand to make sure that people are set up to watch the show.
Exactly. Well, stay tuned because in 30 seconds' time, we'll be back in the car and we will have done the gig. We would have done the inaugural... comedy feast.
We click our fingers just to make magic.
Click. Like Scooby-Doo. Do it. You're on the debrief here with Dave O'Neill and Des Dowling, comedy legend.
Really?
Journeyman. Working comic. As I interviewed Jimmy Carr one day, and I said I was a comic, then he started asking me what sort of gigs I do, and he said, you're like a club comic. We call that a club comic. I went, oh, I do festivals. I've been on TV. You hear my voice cracking. He's like, then there's a pause. He goes, I think you're a club comic. We call you a club comic. Okay, Jimmy, I'm a club comic.
Go back to legend. I'd rather be a legend.
Yeah, legend than a club. He's got his own tennis court and has members of Queen playing him in tennis. So, anyway, he's not going to a chukka.
Fuck him.
Yeah, fuck Jimmy Carr. All right. Keep listening.
All right, yeah. We'll be in touch.
You're back on The Debrief with Des Dowling, comedy legend. Underrated resource, according to Glenn Robbins. It's a good quote.
Like BHP or Blue Steel.
Well, I'm sure he said that the other day. Or maybe he was talking about Brad Oakes or Nick Kappa.
Dave, don't elaborate too much. Just go with your first gut instinct.
Anyway, we've just done the Comedy Feast.
Comedy Feast at a Rich River Golf Club, Moama.
And it went off, I got to say.
Oh, it was good.
How'd you feel it went, Des?
No, it was good. It was good, Dave. It was a very nice crowd. I think we all had good gigs. Stubbsy went well. But now we've got the long drive home, which if you do hear a scream mid-podcast, we could have hit a roo because it is mild night. The roos will be out. They're vermin out.
You're a country boy, so you know about this stuff.
I do. I'll be taking a little bit easy, Dave. I know you're a precious commodity in the comedy world, so I don't want to... I know Husey couldn't survive without you.
Of course.
Husey, we've got a problem.
I think he replaced
Dave,
me pretty... I think he replaced me. He replaced me when I went overseas this year, so... I don't think... All right. I don't think it's a problem.
You're expendable.
There's plenty of guys who will step in. Don't worry about that.
Okay. Good gig, Dave, and we did well.
We all did well.
How many books did you sell?
I sold almost 20. And I sold 15, I reckon.
I'm glad I let you buy me a coffee afterwards.
That's quite a good... Because honestly, you'll go to gigs sometimes and sell one or two.
Yeah.
Normally, the normal amount is four or five, but country, I reckon, is always better than city for books. I don't know why, but they love their books in the country.
They love to have a look at the pictures, Dave.
There are pictures on the inside covers. So that was good for the book-selling public. Good on them. One guy did buy a book and I did want to ask, are you going to read this or, you know, but anyway. And there were quite a few characters there, weren't there? There was
Clay,
who was a seed grader.
He graded seed for a living.
Yeah, which I didn't know what that was, but you knew what that was.
Well, if it's what I think it is, yeah. So he gets seed and decides if it's a certain level and farmers get more money for it and... that's about as far as my knowledge stretches after a long time off the farm.
Yes, and there was also a semen salesman. A cow, bull semen salesman.
Missed opportunity.
He only told us after the gig what he did. Interesting. And also the guy running it, Michael, was not what we expected.
No, you were...
I was thinking guys that want to get gigs going in the country tend to be a young dude who's like a DJ or someone who works at a local radio station. Or a guy our age with an open shirt, jewellery.
Yeah.
But this guy was like an accountant or something.
Yeah, a financial planner or something.
And he just wants to run comedy and...
Maybe he's looking at getting out of financial planning in light of some of the recent revelations.
Yeah,
certainly
the Royal Commission, yeah. But we're leaving Echuca and we just went to the service station where we saw...
Oh.
A very odd scene. We saw a guy our age, so in his 50s, in full leather gear with a Harley... Wedzie. And he...
Maybe no names.
Sorry, Wegsy, like the cartoonist. Wegs. And he had a jacket on that said Prospect. Now, because I've been watching we're Sons of Anarchy fans and the Mayans, that means he's like the apprentice, isn't it?
Yeah, he's trying, he's got to do all the shit jobs for his motorcycle.
But he was in the Bandidos. No names. It wasn't the Bandidos.
No.
It was the Churros. And anyway, so he was there, and he was... I hope we didn't witness a crime. He was our age. So yeah. If you watch the Mayans or...
And it was the most pristine-looking Prospect jacket you've ever seen.
I thought it was a costume at first.
He hasn't laid that Harley down at 110 down the Murray Valley Highway and scratched it.
And he hasn't dug graves in the desert like they do on those shows and bury people. And then he was with a woman who was probably his age, and he was loading stuff into her Audi. And then...
What's going on up there?
And now? Then there was the guy fixing a guy with all tattoos fixing a push bike. And then as we drove off, the prospect was buying ice from the Big Ice. And we had a theory...
Literally ice.
Literally, yeah, ice. Frozen ice. We had a theory that he got sent out by the gang to get some ice. And he's got the wrong end of the stick.
We think Wednesday might have just fucked up the prospect work. Well and truly.
So that's good to know for a comedy career. It doesn't really take off to his... We can become bikies.
It looked like, but the jacket was so pristine.
I know. Maybe it was his first night as a prospect, and his wife came along, and then he said, "Well, you've got to go now. I've got to get you some ice." And
oh,
I don't know what was going on. Anyway, it's a chuka. That's a chuka for you.
Well, it's nice not to have to ring you on the phone, Dave, because I thought I'd done a gig with you recently.
No.
But you said we haven't done a gig for about 2 or 3 years.
I have not done it. You had you on this podcast, and so we mustn't have done a gig for 2 years, even though we do... Yeah, I mean, you run an agency, funnyguys.com.au, for all your comedy. I do a lot of gigs for you, and I always speak to you a lot, but I have not... Like, I reckon maybe we did a school in Ballarat a while ago.
Yeah. Maybe.
But, you know, I do a lot of gigs with Oaksie, Kappa lately, so just think of people that I've had on the podcast. Anyway, it's great to have you on.
It is good to be on.
Mate,
it's good to be an underutilised resource. Well, you're utilising me, so that's
well, your theory. Your crap, if you haven't seen Des, try and catch him. In fact, we can plug that next year, we're going to do the Comedy Festival. Myself, Des and Oaksy, and special guests.
Yes, the Melbourne Comedy Festival, not the Echucamo.
No. So we're going to be at the Grandview Hotel Friday and Saturday nights in Fairfield. Come and see Des work, because Des is one of the best crowd workers you've ever seen. Now, crowd work is where you talk to the crowd.
It's called lack of material.
Yeah, no, but you've got good material. Like, your crowd work tonight was great with Clay, the seed man.
Seed man, spreading his seed.
Oh. But you almost did like 10 minutes of crowd work up front.
Well, but I guess that's just doing lots of gigs today.
Experience.
You know, the more you do, the more you... I remember, this is a funny thing about... I remember just feeling sick in the guts. For the first 5 years of my stand-up career, I just wouldn't...
Just getting on stage.
I was so scared of talking to anyone. And I know that it's just time, and it's just time in the game, I suppose.
I say to people, it's like having a shower now, isn't it? It's just something that you do. So you would be like me, you do 3 or 4 gigs a week.
You're essentially, when you're talking to a crowd, you're fishing for... Sometimes people go, wow, that was brilliant. And I guess you shouldn't belittle it, but you go, well, if you listen to a recording of it tomorrow, you probably go, well, it wasn't genius.
It was on the spot.
It was on the spot.
On the spot.
You come up with a gag, and they go, wow, that was clever. And you go, well, really, it's just... I liken it to boxing, the old letting your hands go. You've got to just say what comes into your head and back yourself that it won't be shit.
I remember talking to Judith Lucy about it years ago, and she said, because I was worried about it, I was going on Good News Week, and I said, those guys are so quick. And she said, don't worry, it's just a muscle that you have to activate and work, and you'll get as good as those guys.
Yes.
And crowd work is a muscle that you have to work on,
yes.
I reckon.
And I think the more confident you get with it...
But also the ability just to move on, too.
You have to be respectful that if you've had a couple that have gone nowhere, don't just keep
going.
Looking for someone to...
There used to be a comic who used to do this. He used to go, what do you do? I'm a cop. No, I got nothing on that. What do you do? I'm a mechanic. No, I got nothing on that. What do you do? I'm an accountant. Oh, good. Accountants are funny.
As well cut to the chase and go, are there any accountants in?
Yeah, exactly. You know what? You're like me, I reckon. You do. You can sometimes sense. You often get a sense of what people do for jobs, do you? Can you? Like tonight, I picked out Frank.
Yeah.
And I said, what do you do? And then I looked and I went, oh, you're a cop. And he was a cop.
Yeah. That was a fluke, but I will sometimes
say... That's body language.
Yeah, and I will sometimes say to someone, do you know any of those people, what they do? And then you almost lead them to tell you.
Oh, no, I've done that beforehand, where I've walked into gigs, especially corporate ones, where you go, who's that guy, what's he do? Then I get up on stage and go, oh, you look like you're in IT. Round of applause.
Yeah, yeah.
But tonight I did actually guess the guy was a cop when I looked at him and went, you're a cop.
I know, and they went off. And I did one where I did a footy club and there was a guy in a suit. And I said, what are you, the barrister, mate? And he was. And you could not convince him that I had guessed him. He just thought people had stitched him up.
But that's how psychics do it. It's called cold reading, isn't it? That's how they do it.
Well, it might have just a stab in the dark, but he was the only dickhead there wearing a suit in amongst footballers on a Thursday night.
Yeah.
So.
What is he going to be doing? He's either real estate, but again, real estate agents have different suits to barristers.
Yes.
Real estate agents are shinier and tighter.
Yeah.
Des, we're going through Elmore.
Did we go through Rochester?
No, I don't know. There seem to be a lot of jokes about Rochester and ice tonight. Have we bypassed Rochester?
I do not.
I don't remember Rochester.
This will start to. We'll end up in some.
We're going to be like that. We're going to be like that. We're going to be like that show that's on at the moment that I'm watching called Manifest, where the plane goes missing for 5 years and then lands like nothing's happened.
I think a metaphor for my career.
But see, for people that don't know Des, he is a journeyman. But you've written on a lot of shows.
Yeah, no, I've worked on a lot of shows, but I do realize it's funny. I've done lots, but I guess you don't. We can't all have the fame and celebrity, but I've worked on a lot of shows I've enjoyed. I enjoyed recent times I've worked on Kinney very much in her
and
support.
You're on screen for that.
And and it was a fun show to work on and great to see a comedian just carving out a career in the modern world where it's all online. Everything he did was online. He did a couple of series for Seven, but then through hard work he promoted himself online. And he's going very well.
He's a hard worker, Troy.
Well, I looked up. I think he's only got Carl Barron ahead of him on sort of people following him on Facebook and these.
Well, that's amazing. Know,
yeah, this is a guy who's never been sort of had.
I don't know where we are on that scale. down the bottom, Des. Somewhere down the bottom.
A lot of big Catholic families.
And also guys from high school that want to connect. And ask you to do gigs for free for their kids' netball team or whatever.
That's always.
But you worked on Family Feud,
The Footy Show,
Man Space, Open Slather with me. And,
yes. Agony Uncles.
Agony Uncles,
on.
You're on. You're in the pilot.
I was in the, well, the original series one.
Yes.
Then they said they wanted famous people. They obviously wanted well-known people.
I don't think I was in series one. I was in series two.
You came in for the well.
I replaced you.
You bastard.
Oh, what an arsehole.
No, that was a very, very good series.
The Great Adams War.
The best thing about that series was having women say, I watch with my 17-year-old son, and we laugh about what think.
Yeah,
and it was a very, yeah. it tapped a deep vein, but of course then it became Agony Aunties, and it became.
Then, I think the last one they did because they had management at the ABC that wanted to make it topical.
Yes.
And no, what was it? It was issue based.
Yes.
And so they did like private versus public school.
Yeah.
One episode. Then they did, and there was some that I just didn't appear at all because I would go to Adam, who produced and directed it. I got nothing to say about.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to talk about stuff that I'm sort of not qualified or. I want to be funny, you know? I don't want to be angry.
No, it was.
I'm angry.
It was a very, very good idea. Well, it's executed.
It's great stuff. And of course, The Feud.
The Feud, the I feud. Enjoyed my time with The Feud. That was probably one of the most enjoyable experiences TV-wise.
Because you got on well with Grant.
Got on well with Grant and the great Pam Barnes, who I'd heard, you'd always hear about Pam, but she ran...
Hey, she was okay. Yeah. She would be like, Daryl would occasionally refer to her and they'd cross to her standing on the side of the stage.
Pam,
can we do, can John Farnham do another song, Pam? Or, you know...
Can you do my Yiddish mummer again with Tom Jones? Sure.
Can I play the drums again, Pam? No. No, Daryl.
No, that was great.
You know, you and Grant, I mean, I was talking to Grant the other day at Des. Yes, I was on...
What was that?
Hughesy, we have a problem. Yep. And Grant was backstage. And in the green room, anyway, he was talking you up. Uh-huh. He didn't use the words undervalued resource. He said he got on very well with you because you're both... And I said, well, you're both farm boys. You're both from a, You grew up on a farm. Where was your farm again?
I often say Yarrawonga, yeah. But it was Berrigan, small town called Berrigan.
So is that between Yarrawonga and Finlay?
It's north of, yes, it's in southern New South Wales, a Riverina.
And there was how many boys in the family?
Five boys.
And one girl. Rural. I reckon I've met all of them. There were a few cops weren't there in there.
Yeah, one was a cop.
And Matt Dowling, of course, if anyone's listening in Shepparton or...
Presents ABC Breakfast.
He does ABC Breakfast.
Very popular up there with the Probus League.
Yes. And he does the local musicals too.
He does local musicals, and I always feel a bit guilty when I get paid for comedy gigs because he goes and does Probus gigs.
For free, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe that's an ABC thing where he can't
probably
pay money.
You know the classic, the funniest member of the family isn't a comedian.
That's what my mum says about my brother Mark. He's the really funny one. Well, he's a tech at a Jewish school, Mum. Yeah. I know, but he's funnier than you. All right, whatever. No. Okay, stop it. It's interesting because how did you? I mean, yeah. So, growing up, was it a funny household or?
No, but I think Dad's.
Where are you in the family tree?
I'm second brother.
Right. And then, so you're not the oldest.
No, but they sent me, because we went to a school of 40 in a little place called Savanac, there's only 10 months between my brother and me. We're born in the same...
Irish twins, that's
cool. We're born in the same financial year.
Wow.
And then my brother went to school and they said, we're going to lose the second teacher unless we get three more kids. So they sent me to school at Easter.
How old were you?
Four.
Yeah, yeah.
With my brother.
Yeah.
And so I was in his class for 6 years, and then the headmaster said to my mum, he would be a lot better off just...
Oh, well, you're like twins.
So I stayed back for a year.
Which brother was this?
Bill, my oldest.
Okay.
So I stayed back a year. I did grade six twice. I repeated.
Man, you're special.
The great stigma of...
Yes. Well, repeating now is a lot easier because often the kids are in Prep 1, 2, for example.
Yeah.
Or, you know, 4 or 5. So it doesn't matter anymore. But when we used to repeat in our generation, it was like, oh, my God, you're staying down.
You must be a total fucking idiot.
And so then how did you get into comedy? Because we talked before, you were a reporter. You weren't Current Affair. You were on...
I did Real Life. I worked on a summer of Current Affair. I did three years at the newspaper in Albury, 3 years at the ABC in Hobart TV. Then I got a job at Channel 9 on a show called Melbourne Extra with John Yost.
Oh, I love John Yost.
Really old people would remember.
John Yost was on the 7:30 Report.
Yes, he was the big recruiter.
And someone used to say, you know, on the 7:30 Report, he's always smoking a joint because when he looks up, there's like a haze of smoke. He's just a smoke machine.
I
love John Yost.
Very interesting cat. And then I switched over to Gerald Stone's...
Oh my God, 60 Minutes.
Well, he went to Real Life and was going to... make it the big, you know.
So you the Stan Grant generation?
Yes, Stan Grant.
Oh, wow.
He said...
When are you delivering your address to the nation, Des?
Well, his famous quote was, this is almost embarrassing to say, but I'll say it anyway.
No, it's a podcast.
He said he was going to make me the Tom Cruise of Current Affairs as a young 25-year-old.
Yeah, the problem is you probably believed it, too.
Oh, I didn't. I was so horrified. I hated... I just hated the whole
Current Affair thing.
Yeah, and they figured out I was no good at foot indoor. I couldn't play.
So you had to do that when you turn up and the kid had died in an accident.
Oh yeah, and you dread reading the paper on a Sunday because it'd be priest got me pregnant at 14. Shock horror, and you'd go, they're going to make they might ring me today and we'll have to go out and doorstop the priest or.
Or the woman, yeah.
But it was about the time of Frontline, and it used to be like living Frontline. I only did it for 2 years because I just couldn't.
Yeah, right.
I was basically so stressed from hating it. But I learned a lot about making TV. I love how you told a story.
Yeah, yeah.
Etc. But so many great stories, and one of them was so Frontline-esque. There was a priest who got a girl pregnant or had an affair with a girl. It was a country girl who got pregnant, came to the city in disgrace, you know, the parents shut
her off. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And she was with the nuns, and this priest had an affair with her.
Right.
And she was on the front page of one of the Sunday papers. So they rushed down to wherever she lived and paid her $10,000 to be exclusive. and came back the next day. And I remember our producer at the time, or the bloke in charge of our Melbourne office, was running around saying things like, what right has this priest got to ruin this woman's life? What, you know, he was basically justifying, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to crucify this priest.
Yeah, right.
And anyway, for once, Gerald Stone rang up and said, well, how do we know that this woman didn't have a consensual affair? Why is there anything wrong if she was an adult and he was an adult? Blah, blah, blah. So then there was big angst in the office because this woman already had the $10,000. So they're running around. And then finally the executive or the producer comes out of his office and goes, I've got it. What right has this woman got to ruin this priest's life? We are going to crucify this woman. And I just, I look at someone and went, we are living frontline.
That is like a frontline episode. But then
they had this producer who used to just love this stuff. And it was in the days where cameras weren't nearly as small, so you often concealed them in a bag.
Yeah, gauze over.
So they sent him down to Brunswick or wherever this priest was saying midday mass to get video of him.
Yeah, right.
And so this funny-looking producer in a cheap suit skulks into the church where there's four little Italian women and a couple of homeless guys, the regulars for midday mass, and sits at the back. So the priest is already totally knowing that he's happening. So this guy is standing there holding the bag under his arm, but is worried he's not getting the right shot. So he holds the bag over his head during the sermon, pointing it at the priest. And the priest looked up and said, sir, what are you doing? And at which stage he bolted out of the church. And anyway, that story never, ever went to air. That priest,
really?
the woman got 10 grand, which I always thought was some sort of justice. And the priest got to keep some sort of...
They probably got married, lived happily ever after.
Well, they weren't together then.
No.
I mean, it's just... It was a very funny...
So how did you go from that kind of life to comedy?
Well, like I bailed. I got a couple of side jobs doing writing and sort of freelancing, and I was only 29 or whatever, and thought, I've got to do it. And that, you know, Dave, that you talk to people who say, I want to do stand-up, and I always say, if you want to do it, you'll do it. And I was proud. I went and watched at the ESPY, saw you at the ESPY.
Yeah. So I could do better than that.
Spent 3 years going...
20 years' time, I'm going to be in a chuka with that guy.
I got out of bed one night and just wrote down 5 minutes of material and started practicing it. And that was it. Went to the Nicholson's.
Oh, Nicholson's. Jed Woods around.
Elbow
Grease.
And he put me down. And luckily, Darren Casey, who I'd worked with a little bit at the
Very funny guy. I was working
at the Footy Show at the time, which was the halcyon days of the Footy Show.
When it was kicking ass,
It was the biggest show on TV by a mile. And so I'd met Darren Casey a few times, and the enigmatic Darren Casey, for anyone who loves...
comedy.
Hardcore comedy. One of the greats.
One of the greats.
And he was there emceeing, so I had a little bit of a not... wasn't as difficult, but it was definitely an out-of-body experience. And
here you are.
There we went.
Here you are. Well, you're listening to The Debrief with Dave O'Neill and Des Dowling. We'll be back. We've just gone through, I don't know where we are, somewhere near Bendigo.
Just you relax, Dave. Drink that hot drink I've made you. Nothing can go wrong.
No, we've been to Macca's, and I haven't been to Macca's for a long time, and I tell you what, it tasted pretty good.
Dave, the woman said, welcome back, Dave.
Yeah, welcome back.
Hi there, I'm Carl Quinn.
Hi, I'm Andrew Young. We are The Clappers, your source for all kinds of sauce when it comes to cultural entertainment in the podcasting style.
That's us, we're The Clappers.
You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, and you know where that is.
We're back on The Debrief, and it's time for me to ask the questions, Des. I ask everyone these questions.
Oh, yes, Dave.
What went well tonight and why, Des?
Country crowd, Dave. I love a country crowd.
You're a country boy.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, and a good age, a lot of couples.
There's a good mix, actually. What we didn't have, though, was a 70-year-old bloke. Maybe we couldn't see if there was a 70-year-old digger.
I also maintain couples going to comedy is good, because a lot of stuff we do now, couples who've got kids, they go out, they have a good laugh.
They're happy to be out.
Happy to be anywhere. So.
Yeah. What didn't go well, then?
The lighting in the green room, yeah, Dave, what was going on with that?
But also, we started at like 7:30, and the light from outside was lighting you on stage.
And lack of a toilet in the... There was only a sink. You pointed out...
How many times have been used
by bands in the past for all sorts of various activities. So
definitely.
So maybe some sort of ablution setup would be better if they could do something there.
Well, that's my next question. Any organisational hazards get in the way?
Everything was pretty good, I thought. I thought sound-wise everything was good. Maybe lighting could have been a bit better.
Lighting could have been better because you sound on one side of the stage was bright and there was a dark spot in the middle.
Yeah, but other than that, no, I thought it was... And they could move Echuca a lot closer to Melbourne. That would be easier.
It's such a funny Echuca Moama. It's just funny. From American Ross, I used to do jokes about Echuca Moama sound machine. They had a band or something.
It's actually a very nice place. But...
Well, I think that the last question is how can we do better next time? Yeah, move it closer.
Move it closer. Maybe some sandwiches in the green room.
Oh, yeah, there was no food.
We do like a sandwich while we're waiting.
There's no food at all.
Yeah.
All right, well, Des, we can play a song.
Oh.
We can drop a song in, man.
All right.
Go on.
I have eclectic taste. Well, I'm probably daggy, but...
Well, define daggy.
I think you would like, I think, which I play for my kids and they like. Is the Saints Stranded?
Oh, the Saints!
Yeah,
I love the Saints. Yeah. I told you I went on Spicks and Specks, and someone's actually put this on YouTube. I put it on my Facebook page the other day. I was on Spicks and Specks with Chris Bailey, and the question was, what was the Village People movie called? And it's called
You Can't Stop the Music.
And then me and Miff started singing You Can't Stop the Music. Nobody. And then I looked at him. I said, "I reckon you could stop the music," because he was a grumpy fucker. And he goes, "I can and I will."
Do you know Bruce Springsteen covered "Just Like Firewood"?
Yeah, that's a great song. I've heard that cover version.
And we'll go with that or Stranded, whichever you like.
Okay, it's something from the Saints. Love the Saints. Des Dowling, check him out. You can follow him on Twitter, Facebook.
We're stopping now, but we've still got another 2 hours of driving.
We'll do another one. We'll pretend we're somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.